What's happening, and you're aware of this, is right now the baby boomers are at the median age where they're retiring. And so over the next few years, we will lose the largest generation in the workforce. And so that's contributing to the scarcity of talent. And what we're seeing in the younger generations, and we've seen this for some time, it's becoming more and more prevalent, is a lack of interest in industries like waste management.
You're listening to Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. On each episode, we sit down with key industry experts to discover more about what's happening in the world of learning and development, from current trends and insights to the most valuable lessons learned along the way. Join us for a fresh perspective on all things training and the best direction forward.
Welcome to Learning Leader Spotlight, where we interview the learning leaders of today to help the learning leaders of tomorrow. I'm your guest host, Tracy D. Lufkin, and I'm a relationship manager with Training Pros, the sponsor of this podcast. Training Pros is a learning and development contract staffing company, and we like to say, when you have more projects than people, let us help you find the best consultant to start your project with confidence. I would like to introduce you to a human-centered leader, Rico Marinto from Waste Management. Welcome, Rico.
Thank you. Glad to be with you, Tracy D.
We would love to, can you share with the audience a 60-second overview of what you do?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I'm the Senior Manager of Leadership Development at WM, formerly Waste Management. Waste Management has about 50,000 employees. We have about 8,000 leaders that we support. And my role primarily is developing those leaders. And so I have a great team of leadership development managers who develop, design, and deliver our 6 to 8 training programs for those leaders. We have open enrollment classes, online offerings, others that they manage and provide. And so that's what we do, is we provide the development for WM's leaders.
Wonderful. And I know your team has won a lot of awards, and I've seen a lot of action happening. So you've got a wonderful team there producing some great results.
We certainly do. Great people and doing great things.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be part of that. So what about L&D first attracted you to this field?
So when I was about 19, I was a missionary for my church, and I spent 2 years teaching people what I believed and a little bit about our church. And I found in that experience that I had a love for teaching. And so I decided to look and see, well, can you make money doing this? And I looked at teaching in school, and then I discovered corporate training and realized, you know, you can make money being a trainer. And so that's where I moved my career towards. At the time, I was in the Air Force later on and began training firefighters, moving in that direction. Then I attended my first leadership development program in the Air Force. And then I realized not only can you be a trainer and teach, but you can teach leadership. And so that's where I got the passion for what I'm doing now. And I really shaped my career from that point to get to where I am now, to really support leadership development at the corporate level.
Wow, how interesting. What a change from Air Force and just the whole background you have. And it's so interesting to hear how people get into learning development and how they stay because they find their true passion. So, and I definitely see that in your work. It's good to hear your story. What do you think are the most impactful changes that you've seen in L&D in the last few years?
You know, I think the shift to more of a skills-based organization has been both interesting and exciting. And I'll confess that when I first heard this concept of skills-based organization, I thought to myself, you know, I've been learning and development. Of course, we know what a skills-based organization is. That's what we do all the time, is we upskill, reskill, and that's what we focus on is skills. And then as I dove a little deeper into what was intended by Josh Burson and others, I began to realize, no, this is quite different. And so I realized what we're talking about here is really changing the way we hire employees, changing the way we see employees, changing the way we develop employees. And, you know, one example of that is doing away with the job description. Traditionally, people are hired to fill a role. And so we create the position, the open position, we advertise that role, and we define the skills we're looking for that role. And then applicants, they see the opportunity, they ask themselves, does my skill set fit this role? And then they change their resume to fit the role even better. All in the idea that we are looking for a limited set of skills. Oh, with a skills-based organization, it's very different. We'll see the employees as a catalog of skills and not limit them to a singular role. And so when we bring them into the organization, we may be targeting certain skills, but we won't ask the employee to limit it to the skills that we're looking for right now, but we'll be very interested in what are all of the skills that you can bring to the table? And where could we potentially leverage those somewhere in the organization? And so when we bring an employee in with all of those skills, we're no longer limiting them to a role, to a team. We are instead putting them in a project. Here is a project that really capitalizes on the skills that we're looking for right now, but then looking at where else can we leverage the employee in another project. So I think where we're moving as an L&D organization is, how do we manage that? How do we identify those skills? How do we identify those gaps in skills? How do we upskill and reskill in that environment? And I think that will be a significant change in how we do business in the coming years.
Oh, yes. And I love the way you say catalog of skills and putting them on a project versus a department. So much. It probably immerses them into the company and gives them a better onboarding experience, just a whole better start. And I love the way you guys are doing that. We'll have to dig into that a little bit more a little bit later. But I am curious to know, where do you see the L&D space heading in the next 5 to 10 years?
Sure. Well, I think as we talk about that skills-based organization, I think what will change with us is we will need to change how we train. So traditionally, L&D creates programs, and you get an employee in the organization. You drop the employee in that program to become the employee you want them to be. And that's the dream we live, is we know we're going to put them in that program and they're going to come out of that exactly what we want. And that's what we like to tell ourselves. But I think as we move to more of a skills-based organization, we will look at employees differently, and we will see instead of trying to create the employee we want, we will take them and look at, how do we give them that one skill that they need for this next project? And so I think training may become much more ad hoc, much more individualized, much more specialized into what do they need just in time. And that will require AI-enabled platforms. That will require a thinking differently about learning and development, and really making us more nimble in the moment. And so I can see what happens is, here's Tracy D. She has this amazing set of skills. She's been phenomenal in this project. We have another project over here. We're looking for someone with similar skills or even different skills. And look, Tracy has some of those skills that are unique to this project. Let's bring her over. But there are a couple skills that Tracy also needs. How do we get her those skills right now before this project starts? And so I think that will change how we develop people, so that it'll be more just in time, more ad hoc, and more specialized for an individual development program.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, I think, where some of the micro learnings come in. Do you guys do that, or do you have a different term for that?
We do. We have a whole library of micro learnings through various platforms. And we incorporate those both into our instructor-led programs, as well as provide them for individual development. As employees go through talent reviews, we recommend some for those specific areas of improvement. So you're right, we're already seeing some of that shift. But I think that the step change will be less programs and more individualized training.
Wonderful. That's great. So with that, are there any obstacles or challenges, or other obstacles or challenges that just in L&G in general that you're facing, and how are you handling it?
Sure. So right now, our biggest obstacle and challenge is really shifting the culture. So, you know, I'm in the leadership development space, and what we've been looking to do is change how leaders think about leading it. We, like most organizations, still have some of those traditional leaders who are more command and control, and we want to change that thinking. We believe that command and control is dead. It doesn't resonate with the generations that are coming into the workforce now, and it has never really been as effective as it could be. And so we're shifting now to that human-centered mindset, as you talked about earlier. And that change in culture with 50,000 employees is a significant change, and requires really changing the language. And so our challenge right now is, how do we make human-centered leadership part of the everyday language of 50,000 employees? And so the 6 to 8 programs that we have in flight or in development are really designed to create that language. Everyone going into those programs, understanding that you're not here just to attend leadership training. You're not here just to learn leadership, the leadership mindset, tool set, and skill set. You are here to learn to become a human-centered leader. And we think there's real power in identifying what we want them to become. I think in the past, I've fallen into the trap of, and maybe some of the listeners of this podcast have seen this as well, we're going to put them in a leadership class. We're going to give them some leadership skills, and they'll become a better leader. And from time to time, what might happen is that command and control leader is in that leadership class, learning those leadership skills and tools. And what they do sometimes is they come out of the class a more sophisticated command and control leader. And so we think, by telling them, no, we want you to become this kind of leader. This kind of leader is different from other kinds of leaders. Let me show you the characteristics of a human-centered leader. Let's talk about the mindset of a human-centered leader, the skill set of a human-centered leader. And so by defining what we want them to become instead of just what we want them to do, I think we get more traction in moving that culture. And so that's the challenge we're facing now is how do we shift 50,000 people to think and act like human-centered leaders?
This episode is brought to you by Training Pros, the award-winning contract staffing agency that works exclusively with learning and development professionals to match the right consultants to client projects. If you're in corporate L&D and have more projects than people, let the industry practitioners at Training Pros provide you with the right L&D consultant to start your project with confidence. Find out how we make finding quality consultants easy by scheduling a consultation at www.trainingpros.com.
That is a big challenge. I mean, change, as we know, is difficult for people and takes time. And a needle moves very slowly. But as long as you're seeing that movement, that's the key, right? So if you had 10 times your current budget, where would you spend it?
Well, wouldn't that be fantastic to have that? I think as we talk about this shift to a skills-based organization, the management of what that is really complicated. And if I had 10 times my budget, I would love to invest in an AI-enabled platform that could do all of that work for us to make a skills-based organization actionable. And so what I'm envisioning, and there are platforms that are currently on the market that are starting to do these things. And so I'm really excited about the evolution. We're just at the infancy of AI. We're barely scratching the surface on what it is and what it will become. I heard someone yesterday that I really respect put it this way. They said, we are in the dial-up modem phase of AI. And so I think that's so true. We're just barely scratching the surface. But where we want to get to is to the point where we have an AI-enabled platform that can simply identify all of the skills for every role in an organization. And then they're able to, as applicants apply, catalog all of their skills, then able to match those skills to all of the different roles we have and identify, you know, I know this person's applying for this role, but really they have a skill set that fits this role. And again, trying to move away from roles, so I shouldn't be using that language, but just able to identify those skills and where they fit in the organization, able to catalog those skills, create that database of skills. And then as we bring that employee in, able to identify these are the gaps that employee needs to fill so that L&D knows how to respond. Then as different projects come up and we identify for this project, we pop into the AI-enabled platform, we need these skills. It then scans that database of employees, all of their skills, and brings up, these are all the employees that have those skill sets already. And if you look at these employees, these are the skills that they don't quite have that might need to be developed before they can help in that project. Also, the employee would have the ability to say, you know, in 10 years, I want to be here. And the platform would then be able to look at where that employee is, look at all the skills that employee has already demonstrated, look at the skills that we've required, not in just that role, but all the roles that would lead to that role, and say, well, your next position should be this. If you want to get here, your next position would be here. And these are the skills you need here. So you need to develop these two. The following position would be here. And it really maps out that career path so that employee understands which skills they need to grow in. Then that ad hoc training comes in, that individualized, specialized development plan comes in to help the employee grow in those skill areas, close those skill gaps. And then the employee has a clearly defined career path and a clearly defined development path to help them reach the goals they want to reach in their career. So if I had a larger budget, I would invest in a platform that could do all of that.
Yeah. Wow. That would be amazing to be able to, with that many employees, to be able to match up and find the skills and match with projects. And there are so many AI platforms out there that are being developed. And as you mentioned, the dial-up modem phase, I love that. For those of us that are old enough to remember the dial-up modems and what that sound was, that does, I think, depict where we're at today. It's very interesting. So let's move on then to what do you find as of today is a skill, or I know you're not using role, but a skill or a role is the hardest for you to find talent for right now?
You bet. Well, you know, for us, like I mentioned earlier, I think I mentioned, we have about 22,000 trucks on the road every day. And so for each one of those 22,000 trucks, we need commercial licensed drivers, right? And right now, that's the challenge for us and a lot of people in our industry and even outside of our industry. What's happening, and you're aware of this, is right now the baby boomers are at the median age where they're retiring. And so over the next few years, we will lose the largest generation in the workforce. And so that's contributing to the scarcity of talent. And what we're seeing in the younger generations, and we've seen this for some time, it's becoming more and more prevalent, is a lack of interest in industries like waste management. One thing that we are doing that I think is appealing to those younger generations is that shift from waste to really environmental protection. And so we're really becoming a leader in the environmental space, and that is attracting some of this younger talent. But, you know, recently I was in my daughter's school, and the younger kids had all drawn pictures of what they want to be when they grow up. And no one drew a picture of a garbage truck. No one's wanting to grow up to be in the garbage business. They all want to be social media influencers. They want to be TikTok stars. And so we're losing this baby boomer generation. The workforce is literally shrinking. We have these up and coming generations that don't have a passion for this industry and that kind of blue collar kind of work. And so we're finding this new generation's not filling the gaps that the outgoing generation is leaving. And we're especially feeling that in that driver space. And so that's the area where we feel that pain the most. Another area, and it's similar for all the same reasons, is our technician role. We call them technicians, more commonly known as mechanics, but they're the ones that ensure those 22,000 trucks stay on the road. And for all the same reasons, we're having trouble finding good talent for those roles. And so that's really the challenge I think we and a lot of people in our industry and a lot of people in other industries are facing.
Yeah, I'm sure that is. You have a unique advantage, I think, with having that focus on the environmental protection and being as large as WM is, they'll have a greater impact. And that is something, of course, that's value to the younger generation is wanting to be able to preserve and improve our environment. So I think that's a great direction. And hopefully some of the other companies that are experiencing similar challenges to you will look to that area as well. So I'm curious as to what is your favorite source of industry news and information? Where do you go for your news?
You bet. So I get information from a lot of different places, and that's probably not wise on my part, but our team is a member of ATD. We're part of the ATD forums. And so once a month, we participate with a group of like-minded individuals within ATD to create that forum and have conversations around relevant topics. We've talked about AI, we've talked about skills-based. And so that's one source of information. I always learn so much from my peers who are in the same space, dealing with some of the same challenges, but coming up with innovative and creative ways to address those. I'm also a member of IC4P, which is an organization that has a wealth of studies, of blogs, of articles, of resources, and I find great information there. I'm on a countless mailing list, so I'm just inundated in my inbox with information. And I like to follow Josh Burson. I think we've talked a lot about skills-based. Josh Burson is one of the champions of this skills-based mindset. And I feel that he has, you know, his fingers on the pulse of HR, of learning and development. And so I follow him pretty closely and a few others. And so I think to answer your question, just from a lot of different places, and I really just look at what catches my interest in the moment, and then I do a deeper dive into that. So those are some of the resources that I lean on.
Those are some great resources. We love our ATD chapters, and the local chapters, I think, is a great way to share information and meet local people and stay engaged for sure. Do you have one book that you could recommend out of some of those resources, or just one book that if there is someone moving into L&D leadership that you would recommend?
So you say L&D leadership. And so if I could, I'd like to split those because I have a book for L&D and a book for leadership. Would it be okay if I
Perfect.
Gave you two? All right. Sounds
yes,
good. You're getting twice
great.
What you asked for. I guess that's a good thing. So for learning and development, one thing we've really been working on, and I think maybe other organizations are as well, is really optimizing that adult learning. And for whatever reason, somewhere in the past, we got into the habit of let's teach a concept and then do an activity to reinforce the concept, and then we move on to the next concept. And that's really not optimized for adult learning. And so what we're really trying to do is flip that. Let's put the learners in an activity first and have them in that activity explore what they already know about that concept. Learn from each other's wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Really try to dig out of them in that activity, self-directed activity, all that they already know so they can learn from each other. And then the facilitator's role then becomes, how do you fill in the blanks? How do you fill in the gaps of that learning? And so one book that I really like, it's been around for a while, that has helped me understand that mindset is Sharon Bowman's Training from the Back of the Room. And it's really all about adult learning. And how do you put adults in activities and environments so that it optimizes them learning from each other? And it really helps a facilitator move from that, you know, sage on the stage mindset to the guide on the side mindset. And I would encourage facilitators to read it. I would encourage instructional designers to read it and to really rethink the traditional design methodologies to ensure we're creating that optimum adult learning environment. So Training from the Back of the Room, Sharon Bowman, is what I would recommend for the L&D side. For the leadership side, a book I would strongly recommend is Leadership and Self-Deception by Arbinger. Arbinger is the company. There's not really an author that claims credit for the book. The company claims credit for the book. And what's fascinating about it is it really helps to open the mindset of what it means to be a human-centered leader and to see people as people. It's easy to be in a leadership role and to unintentionally see people as obstacles, as vehicles, as irrelevancies. How do I get them to where I need to get to? And Leadership and Self-Deception helps us realize when we're doing that, helps us realize when we're creating contention, what they call a collusion in a relationship or between teams, and helps a leader understand when they've been leading differently, when they've been leading incorrectly, and how to create influence by changing that mindset so that you do see people as people whose goals, objectives, and values are equally important as your own. And I think as we focus on human-centered leadership, that book is really core to changing that mindset.
Oh, wow. It sounds like it. I haven't heard of that, but I'm going to definitely look that one up. And just also for our listeners, all the resources that Rico has shared with us today will be in the podcast notes. So feel free to take a look there. It'll have the titles and authors and everything else that he shared with us. There's some great information there, Rico. Thank you so much. Well, I want to thank you for appearing on the show today. It has been great to see you and to hear about all of the different things that you're doing within human-centered leadership. I know that is definitely an area of focus for many companies, but yourself and your team and WM are really focused on that. I've seen podcasts talking about some of those areas, and you guys are really walking the talk. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Tracy D, and thank you for all you're doing to support the leadership and development professionals out there and provide resources like this to help them grow and learn and progress. So thank you.
Of course. And I also want to express my sincere thanks. And as a gift for being on the show, we're going to plant 5 trees in your name. So I'm talking about environmental, we do our part to try to give back as well. We have a charity at Training Pros that is planting trees around the world, and we've planted over 3,500 trees to date. So we'll plant 5 trees in your name and send you a certificate showing you where they're planted. And it's just our way of letting you know how much we appreciate it.
Well, that's wonderful. And thank you for doing that. What an important thing to do, and what a privilege to be part of this discussion today.
You're welcome. And that's this episode of Learning Leader Spotlight.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.